Okay, good evening. This is a regularly scheduled meeting, it's a special meeting of the Programs and Services Committee. It's Monday, April 1st, 7 p.m. I'm Amy Sangiello, Chair of the Committee. With us tonight are Steve Linsky, the Vice Chair of the Committee, Alderman Blazer from Ward 6, and Alderman John Rice from Ward 5. Tonight we have the appointment of by the President of the Board, item number 120-13, Dana Gelb Safran of 10 Loudoun Road, Newton, appointed as a member of the Healthcare Advisory Committee for a term to expire February 25th, 2016. Ms. Gelb?
Hi.
And I'm going to let Steve take over.
Well, Dana, last time we met in a special meeting, it was to take everyone, all nine others. So we kind of, worked our way through as best as possible because we did this in part because there's this regular board meeting that will be coming up. So we will be ending at 7:45. The mayor will be coming here at 7:30. And also we are joined this evening by the city clerk, David Olson, and by Weedy Young from the law department.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You're going to get to, it's okay. They have a part that's going to be coming in relative to training the body on conflict of interest and other things. I won't say all of it, so the rest of that. But anyway, Dana, you are our 10th appointee, but is presently a 10-member panel. And after the committee votes this evening, it will then be reported to the board meeting, and it will be voted on by the full board. So hopefully by the time you get into your next meeting, you'll be right there as a fully fledged member.
Okay.
So you caught up very quickly. We have your CV that's on file here. And so basically we gave all the other appointees an opportunity to tell us a little bit about yourself and also kind of what are the interests that you see that you're interested in pursuing as a member of the committee. And we're joined by Alderman Fishman from Ward 8.
Hi.
Hello. Hi.
I'm Dana Safran.
Hi.
Nice to meet you. So a little bit about myself. And
yeah, a little bit about yourself and the kinds of things you're looking to do in the work of the committee.
Great. So my background's in public health, and I work at Blue Cross in Massachusetts. I've been there for 6 years, and I'll tell you a little bit about that role, but also tell you that prior to that I spent 16 years leading a research institute at Tufts as a medical center there, and my focus has been on quality measurement and quality improvement. And so as that moved from being largely an academic exercise to something that was real world, being used in real world for measurement and improvement, my academic life started to transition to less just for study purposes and more working with organizations throughout the Commonwealth on measuring and improving, and in particular, patient-centered care, focusing on patients' experiences of care, understanding how that affects outcomes like adherence to medical advice, improved clinical status, reduced malpractice suits, and other things like that. And so in 2006, Andrew Dreyfus invited me to join his team at Blue Cross, leading a new area, which would be performance measurement and improvement. And that role hadn't existed, but he understood that performance measurement was getting to be much more important and an expectation that the market, as well as policymakers, had of health plans, and that the company and other health plans also didn't have any in-house expertise on that. So it's been my role to be that source of expertise and develop a team that can carry out programs that use good measurement to improve quality outcomes and affordability of care. And very shortly after I got there, we embarked on creating a new payment model that has gotten a lot of national attention, so might be in the awareness of this group, called the Alternative Quality Contract, and has been the basis for some state legislation around payment reform. And I've really been at the forefront of leading the company's efforts on implementing that and on speaking about it locally and nationally and studying its results with our data. So why I'm interested in this is because, I came to the role that I have at Blue Cross having spent my career really focused on quality and quality improvement, hadn't thought about cost or cost issues since graduate school until that conversation with Andrew Dreyfuss, and suddenly in that moment realized that, that there was kind of, after that moment of realizing I had spent my career focused on only one part of the problem and really my back to the other huge problem, couldn't move forward with a career that was only focusing one way. So it's been really interesting and valuable to be focusing on how do we improve quality while addressing costs and slowing the rate of growth so that healthcare doesn't grow up faster than the economy. And, you know, I've come to really feel that the next key beyond what we've done, which is payment reform with our provider network, is having a public that understands healthcare better and understands what are we buying with our healthcare dollars. And I actually believe that that has to start with cities and towns. So I was pretty excited when John asked me about this opportunity because I haven't had an opportunity yet to work closely with a city or town, and what better place than the one I live in to really start to, you know, help all of us understand what are we really buying with our healthcare dollars, and, you know, all the ways that we're investing in healthcare that cause us to divest in other things like education and the other things that are valuable to spend a city's money on. So I'm pretty excited about the opportunity to be involved and be help.
Let me just note that we've also been joined by Alderman Hesmahan from Ward 3 and Alderman Baker, who's just walked in from Ward 7. Lyle will be kind of picking up the ball and serving going forward as the committee liaison, our committee liaison to your committee. Let me take the opportunity, unless you want to add something else, to open the floor for questions. I might close the doors.
You got part of it about some advisory and healthy people out there.
Oh, not a minute. Thank you. Alderman Fishman.
So I was very impressed by your resume.
Thank you.
It took me a long time to go through it.
Sorry you did that.
This is a short version, too.
This is a short version. The patient-centered care, I think I'm actually familiar with it because members of my extended family, Beth Lam, she's involved.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's Harvard also. Or,
yeah.
Not exactly, but... So it's interesting because I think, you know, as a member of the committee, that would be a very interesting kind of focus. And I guess I was just interested, you know, again, you know, you don't know exactly where you're going to go with everyone's background, but given any thought to how your particular background, you know, could kind of lead the group in one direction or another?
That's an interesting question. I guess... In part, it's the thread that I started a moment ago, which is really I think it's that in general as a public we don't understand very well what our healthcare dollars are buying. You know, the way insurance is structured, we really don't even understand what it costs. And up until, you know, the current forms of payment, most clinicians didn't even really understand what it costs. So I think part of it is helping people understand what they're buying and understanding the value in that. And you know, a big part of what patients want, I think, is not just health, but it's care where they feel like they're treated as a whole human being. So since that is where I spent such an early part of my career, I guess that's how I'd see it tying in, is making sure that in whatever decisions we make that we're not moving toward a system or a set of benefits or a structure that could jeopardize that, but rather something that would advance us towards that.
Thank you.
Sure.
I'll ask my hand.
Well, thank you, first of all, for being willing to serve, and I was also duly impressed by your resume. My father recently passed away, and I spent the last 20 years handling his financial affairs and as his healthcare proxy, and I have to say, you hit the nail on the head for me, which is I'm not a dope, but I could not understand why his Medicaid statements would tell me what the cost of the service was and tell me, you're not being billed this amount, but it was some exorbitant amount. Mm-hmm. And then I looked at what was actually being paid by Medicaid, and I began to wonder, gee, who picks up the difference for that? And, of course, all I have to do is look at my own health care premiums to understand that. Mm-hmm. But do you have any... are there any other states that have any experience in controlling healthcare costs any better than Massachusetts has?
Well, there's 49 states that have lower costs than Massachusetts has. But I think
that is directly involved with the size of our medical infrastructure here. It's sort of like the military-industrial complex of the 1950s, but yes.
I think you're right that's a big part of it. But interestingly, the rate of growth in the states has been about the same. So, you know, we're the first state to do something so bold as what Chapter 224 does and try to set a cap on that. Maryland has tried very hard through its rate-setting approaches, but has not been successful at really reducing the rate of growth in healthcare spending. So I think we're in the same boat, or we've been in the same boat as everybody else in terms of growth, even though our others have a lower base than we do. But I do think that what we have in place right now, both in terms of coverage, in terms of the commitments to payment reform and the role the state is playing in that we actually have the possibility of being the first to figure out how to get growth rates under control. So that would be pretty exciting.
I know they've been trying to do that since Truman, at least. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Without hurting quality.
Exactly.
Yeah.
No, I agree.
Yeah.
Anyone else? I'm going to ask you, I think, to me, one of the most relevant portions of your background is exactly what you're doing now on the performance measurements. Because I think for what our kind of target group is, as you understand, it's city employees and retirees.
Yeah.
And particularly for active employees, it's about, you know, directing higher quality care. Some of the things that you've just spoken to are kind of larger issues that certainly extend beyond, you know, what we would be doing. And I don't know, I was just reading this weekend a recent Time magazine article that kind of popular press.
You read the whole thing in one weekend? That's good.
But it spoke a little bit to when you said for people to understand a little bit more transparently what... what they're buying with healthcare dollars, because it doesn't always, it's not so obvious, I guess.
Not at all.
It's
hard to figure that out.
But on the performance measurement side, and there's something, in fact, Dean may have, I know does, I have a background from the workers' compensation and of early efforts and with that reform to bring that about. And I think, Dean, particularly about Section 10C, which is it's put in the 1991 Reform Act of the Workers' Compensation Act that basically enabled employers who had unionized workforces, as we do as a public employer, to negotiate with the unions the nature of the kind of care that would be delivered in situations involving at-work injuries.
Mm.
So instead of, for instance, just falling into what sometimes is a merely adversarial process, you know, the insurers get their doctors, the clients get theirs, there's a possibility of jointly shared, kind of neutral, so to speak, medical providers, and with the ability of directing better care and less adversarial care at the same time. Now, that particular provision, it's been totally unused ever since it's been enacted. And I know there were reasons for that, in part because it's in a collective bargaining environment. It's hard to kind of get to that point because someone's got to own it coming in. But one of the things as a neutral body that this could be, if it was looked at, could be some recommendations that instead of coming from one side or another, is just kind of made generally available for both parties to look at.
Mm-hmm.
So it's about really, you know, looking to that and to directing care that is related much more to work than just overall generalized care. And I don't know precisely how much of your work in the performance management area has focused on kind of occupational type of health.
Right. Yeah, not very much at all. We don't have good measures of that, but, you know, for sure, one of the things that employers are looking for is that their employees be able to function well.
Yeah, well, that's...
And that's one of the reasons for providing good benefits is so that when people are sick, they can get the care they need and get well and be able to function well at work. And there are some pretty well-validated measures. They're just not part of what health plans use today that deal with that question about workplace functioning and start to get into some of those issues. So it might be interesting to explore.
Yeah, in fact, now there's over 20 years, correct me if I'm wrong, from the development of the treatment protocols that at least been in some form or fashion. And I don't know whether there's experience and data that derives from that that might be of use for
some
of the community's
work.
I think,
you know, I think depending on the system has evolved away from that, and I think it's moving more towards sort of a process-driven, you know, system that really sort of relies on hospitals and providers to figure out among themselves sort of what is the most effective and efficient approaches, which I think is good. And I think, yeah, sort of critique of the treatment guidelines and all this kind of, I think some of the days of utilization review, especially driven at a state level, at a very centralized level, that's really very difficult to do. Whereas I think sort of the modern trend is to, bundled payments, global payments, gives some discretion on the provider and hospital side to figure out, where changes need to be made.
Anything else? Let's see. Which ward are you? Amy.
I would like to move the appointment.
Okay.
Did our daughters play soccer? I did. Countryside, right?
Bottom. Oh,
you're being looked at
now.
Cabot, okay.
It doesn't have to work. Well, I think it's just come in with the redistricting. Where did you vote last time?
Cabot.
But but when the chair...
It's always been with two.
No.
Yeah. Lot home, yeah.
No.
Lot home, yeah.
Yeah.
Not this part. Anyway.
We used to vote at the fire station.
I was wrong last time.
I know. I was
wrong last time with that. I'm part of the historical district, but I'm part of it, not all of it. If the chair has moved,
I move.
We can jointly move.
Okay, that's fine.
Any further discussion on the motion to approve? Seeing none, all in favor of approval? 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Not opposed, and...
Are you sure it's not a scenic road?
So then if I vote 7 in favor, none opposed, you are approved by this committee. That will be reported, as I mentioned earlier, to the full board,
yes.
And hopefully we'll have full approval. And by the time you're done here with your work, we'll approve. As I mentioned, there are other things coming up for you folks. The mayor's coming in 4 minutes if he's on time. There's stuff that you and we are going to do. David's going to have to depart to...
I'm here to swear in any of those of you who have not been sworn in yet to the committee, and then Lita is here to provide some guidance and training on conflicts of interest for the group and open meeting.
So there'll be more folks coming up, I guess, because we told them at 7:30. There's a few that we can check. There's also refreshments for anyone who wants to.
Are they helping?
Are they
helping?
I'm not as healthy as a cookie dough. So we should, Amy,
oh, not here in Boston. My main name is Jared, so it's my family.
All those in favor? Many meetings with Jared. Thank you.
Yeah.